In that sense, it seems to be no wonder that the justice system, like I said, in many countries is found wanting, even crumbling now. And the very government that is supposed to uphold the law undermines it constantly, remember? Though we are obliged to accept money, nobody can force us to pass it on. Should be, but nobody does. Anyway, and so it goes on. The next problem comes here, enforced growth. We know three different growth patterns. Did you know that? Stupid question. We know. Did you know? I know three different growth patterns. Do you? This is what we know in school or whatever.
Economic terms.
Thank you. We have three different growth patterns. Number one is the so-called natural. It starts off with a big bang and then it slows down until it's satisfied and maintains itself. It's just like birth. You know, you come with a big bang into the world, you grow quickly until you are, 17, 18 or what, and then you slow down in your growth. You grow here, but nobody sees when you know. Oh, you're supposed to grow here. But it slows down and then you basically maintain for a while the same status. That's it. That's natural. It's with trees, it's with plants, it's with everything. That's natural. That's how God designed it. Then, say it again.
What's everything?
Now you're taking me here. Then we have what we know as linear growth. Two machines produce 200 pieces a day. Four machines then produce, 400. That's linear. So, you see, if you add on in the same... Thanks. And then we have what we know exponential. An exponential is only basically known from diseases which are destructive. Exponential starts off with very little and shoots up and is unstoppable. For instance, cancer. You hardly detect cancer cells. Today it's a little bit easier, but you know, usually when you detect it's almost too late. With HIV, it's still like that. Once you detect that a person has caught HIV, AIDS, not just the virus, it's too late usually.
Also human population?
No. There we go. You see, the thing with exponential growth is that usually the agent eats up the host. Ouch. So here are a few principles, a few rules. Unlimited growth in a confined area is impossible, right? Can you understand this statement number one? Unlimited growth in a confined area is impossible. You can only grow as much as this room allows you. That's it. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page. Number two, every healthy and natural growth has an optimal limit. You understand that one? Good. It's important. All parts of an organism must orientate themselves at the whole in their development. If your head grows faster than the body, you have a problem. Yeah, it sounds funny. I have a niece. She has exactly that. We call it a hydrocephalus. It's caused by some defects where you gather a lot of water and the head is getting so heavy that the body cannot carry it, so you have to drain it out. It's not right. You see, everything should go in relation to each other. And finally, every development that disregards natural principles is condemned to crash, like AIDS, like cancer, etc. And there we go. Because these rules also apply to the economical growth. And growth examples I want to show you now. Because compound interest eats us up. Compound interest grows exponential. Compound interest, just like I showed you with the $1, shoots up at some stage. It starts slow, you hardly notice, that's why you don't care. But when you care, it's too late. Here's a little example, and this is what we have to understand. You know, we say, for instance, in our country here, we say we want to grow at a year's rate of 6% for the next 10 to 20 years. Now they reduce it to 5%. But even that is ridiculous, because we perceive it as a linear growth. 5% doesn't mean in 20 years we have increased by 100%. 5% means something more. Let's stick with the 4 and add 6, because I made this example. After 10 years, we already have a growth of 48 or 79%. After 20 years, 119 or 221. After 30 years, you can read it for yourself, and after 40 years, you can read it for yourself, and here's after 50 years. Now, this means, because our money grows with the exponential interest rate, you know, the amount of money growth, it needs to be covered by economic activity, right? Otherwise, the value of the money goes down, right? So in order to cover it and keep the people at peace, we need to do more in our economies, which means we need to grow at least at the same rate, which means we need to exploit the resources at a faster pace, which means we destroy our own lifeline designed by ourselves, because we say there is no God. I'm in charge. There are no absolutes, no boundaries, because we say, I know what's right and what is wrong. We say, you don't tell me. An anticipated annual growth of the same percent never, ever results in linear growth pattern. That's what we need to know. Now, here are a few other statements. The original purpose of economy was to provide for human needs in order, basically, to follow the natural growth pattern. At the time where we have fulfilled all our needs, we just maintain. But because of compound interest, which makes money grow this way, we cannot maintain anymore. We need to create more wants, so that instead of being happy with what we have, people want more than they can afford. Today's purpose of the economy is creating wants, like I said, to accommodate the financial pressure, which comes through the exponential growth. Man used to be the defining subject of the economy. Now we have turned into its object. We are not the ones who dictate anymore how it has to be. Now the economy dictates to us. It's very strange. Instead of fulfilling our role as good stewards of natural resources and entrusted goods, mankind has developed into a consumer and throw-away society. Since consumers can only swallow so much, new markets have to be explored. You know, the economy, based on the system we have, is really forced to grow. There is no standstill. Those who stand still die. That's why you will never, ever, ever see anywhere a company out of free will say, we're going to stay the way we are. They always want to grow. And that's why you never, ever, ever will see a government saying, we are happy with the status quo. We just shift the wealth a little bit to the other side. They will always speak about growth, because they can't without. They have to. They are forced to. Otherwise they die. And so they force everything which God has entrusted to us to be destroyed at a higher, quicker pace and rate than God anticipated. And we are part of it. We say we serve God, and yet we destroy the lifeline for God's people. What else do I have? Yeah, this is a good one, because it's from a German playwright. No, but I love this. They were busy sawing the branches off on which they sat, and shouted their experience to each other on how to saw faster, and crashed with a loud bursting noise down into the depth. Those who watched them shook their heads and continued sawing. That's what we're doing. And here's how. Hoarding money leads to economical problems. Interest makes money owners let go. Compound interest means exponential growing interest burden. Fast growing. The interest burden can only get covered by higher earnings. These earnings will, with all the exploitation, there is an E missing, exploitation of resources, etc., have to grow exponentially too. And that holds for individuals, companies, communities, or whole governments. In exponential growth in economies is practically impossible. Remember, in confined areas, you cannot grow indefinite. So with the resources and the possibilities we have in our economies, we cannot grow indefinite. So we are limited, which causes problem. In other words, with the current system, we are trapped. That's what we are, tripped and trapped. Sadly, people don't want to know that. To stay with Bertolt Brecht's picture, people, companies, communities, and governments are crashing with a bursting noise into the depths of indebtedness, insolvency, and bankruptcy. And yet we shake our heads in dismay but continue to walk energetically exactly in the same direction. That's what we do. Keeping. Dam it up. Keep it, not releasing. So, that was the growth problem resulting in this. Here, I want to give you a little picture, because we have usually the idea that there are rich economies, they are really having it all together, and then there are others. These are information which I got from different resources. Like you see, you also have these tables in your notes. It's about Germany and the United States. In 2004, I think it was still the United States being the strongest economy considered. But here is how they look. You know, we have three different kind of debts. The public debt, which is usually generated by the governments. That's what we perceive as public debt. Then we have corporate debt, the businesses and corporations, and private debt, the so-called consumer debt. And this is how Germany looks. In 2004, just 1.5 years ago, not even, a little over a year ago, they had in public debt $1.7 trillion. And the corporate debt was about $4 trillion or $4,000 billion. That's 9 zeros behind these numbers there. Which, with a consumer debt, adds up to $7.5 trillion. In other words, they the whole gross domestic product, which is only 2.65, needs to work for 285% or 2.5 or almost 3 years free of charge in order to recover just this debt, and interest is not even considered here. So in other words, the rich economy Germany, which everybody perceives to be safe haven, is so highly indebted that even the underwear doesn't belong to the people anymore. Yeah, it's true. And the United States is not different. They have a little bit of a different setup, but you know, with $33.2 trillion and today the picture is even different. If I would tell you that they just spent $50 trillion on, I don't know, wars and I don't know what, their budget is basically just now for holy wars in God's name, and I just cannot see God in it anyway. But you know, they have to work for 3 years as well, free of charge, just to cover this debt. And you know, when you work for 3 years without eating and without anything, you die. So these economies are dead. It's a bubble. It's unreal. It's not true. In other words, everything which is there is covered in debt. It's unreal. We think it is real, and this is the answer a little bit. We think the assets are really giving some kind of value, but even if we talk about assets or asset erosion, in the end we talk about indebtedness all the way through.
Sorry, what is that gross domestic product?
This is what a company, what a country produces in services and products over a period of a year. The economic activity of a country, valued in money. No.
It's
the turnover.
But how did they determine that? That's a very difficult thing to determine.
Even if you cut it by half, even if you double it, the debt problem is still there. Let me show you a few other pictures, more on a worldwide basis. The fact book from the CIA for 2004 shows $32.9 trillion on public debt for the 100 richest nations. Public debt, government-inflicted debt by the end of 2004. Now, if you consider the external debt which the poor nations have, it's usually public debt, because you cannot borrow money within a poor country. There is no money, so you need to borrow external. So that's why the external debt usually is public debt. If you consider that as public debt, it's another $13.6 trillion, which leads to a total of $46.5 trillion in government-inflicted debt by the end of 2004, with a year's gross domestic product of $55.5 trillion, we have reached 10 months of unpaid work for the whole world, just to cover government-inflicted debt.
It's
just government. And government is the smaller part. So there you go. That's 27.4 billion each calendar day, or $1.5 million every second. And interest is not considered.
Sorry, do we cover where that debt is held in terms of the public debt?
That's a good question.
Will we be covering that?
Well, we can talk about it, but nobody really knows. The money usually is just in a few hands, really. We touch a little bit on it when I talk a bit about the United States, the Federal Bank, and things like that, because there's a system behind it. But entirely, you will not be able to cover it.
It's covered, but somebody, is it covered by the ratio of lending to holding?
It's covered. It's covered because debt always is balanced by wealth. So if there is a debt of amount X, somebody has to have the money. Otherwise, you couldn't have or have a claim on this money. The question is who? No, he is really a small fish, but I will talk a little bit about. I want to share a little bit about the United States as well, but we cannot really know. I have my own opinions, but I believe it's only a very small minority who really holds the whole power of money, because there's a system behind it. But we get to that. So remind me if I don't really get to it, but I think I get to it. Now, here's another statement. The economic output, economic activity, what they produce in a year, simply cannot keep up with the overdevelopment of debt anymore, which makes a continual service of debt impossible. In other words, you cannot pay what you borrowed. You cannot pay it back. It's impossible. The reason for that is the absurd money growth pattern due to interest and compound interest. In most cases, a gladly promoted debt consolidation and refinancing is merely a masquerade and itself hardly a successful instrument getting out of the problem. Because it doesn't really matter. Sometimes it matters, but in the end it doesn't really matter whether you have 10 different debts and consolidate them to one. You still have to pay them off with interest. Sometimes you just score a little bit if you get a better interest rate, but the interest rate usually is so killing anyway. Subsequently, at least when you look at greater margins for countries or companies, subsequently it only seems to be a matter of time and until the world's economic system collapses. And it is really half past, or 2 minutes before, maybe one, I don't know.
Maybe the only way to that problem or that situation, that picture you show us now, it's maybe a war, a world war.
Wait. Can I wait? You can ask this question, but you're going ahead. Are you fine if we finish this section today? Because if we cut it now, it's bad. I'd rather give you a bad night tonight so that you're eager for answers tomorrow than carrying on tomorrow. Okay? So overdevelopment, the other overdevelopment goes into the monetary assets. Remember the picture, monetary assets, the claim on money and things like that? So here we have somebody who has too much. So he gives it to the bank and they give it to somebody who has too little. So we have in the exact same amount somebody who has a debt. Somebody has wealth, another one has debt. Okay? Now, the problem is the guy must pay some interest, including the borrowed money, which increases the monetary assets. But this one needs to go back again into the economy, which makes the indebtedness even higher. The problem with this is that money needs to be paid back with interest, which makes the monetary assets even bigger. And in order to get the money circulating, you need to bring it back into the economy, which makes the indebtedness bigger. So we have a credit expansion on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have an expansion in interest income, which is quite strange. Now, monetary assets reproduce themselves through interest and compound interest. In other words, without activity, just through this little interest segment, they reproduce them, which is strange. From nothing comes something. Oops, wrong button. Interest and compound interest cause money to double in regular intervals. This leads to a permanent income shifting from labor to capital. We're at an accelerated speed with arithmetical regularity, and you cannot stop it, even if you want to. It's impossible. As long as the system is in action, it works like that. Like one wheel fitting into the other one. So, large monetary asset portions get channeled back into the circulation through credits. That leads to further interest income that has to be produced by those who had too little money anyway. So they need to work more, not just for what they borrowed, but even for the interest. And therefore had to borrow.
Yeah.
The result is yet again accelerated growth of monetary assets and a corresponding compulsion to indebtedness. The paradox is that increasing interest flows are both the cause and the result of monetary assets. It's like the chicken and the egg. What was there before? What was there first? This monetary hydrocephalus becomes a growing burden to the economy, to the economic body. And there you go, increasing monetary assets, claim on money and what have you, are balanced by an equal debt. Somebody has to work for it. All these debts are supposed to be covered and secured by tangible assets, you know, buildings, equipment, what have you, which paradoxically are created through this very debt. Yes, we borrow money in order to obtain or build these assets, but we don't have enough money to pay it back. So the assets are basically indebted. Hence, tangible assets drown more and more in debt, creating lots of insecurities in the economy. There's hardly any kind of company anymore who does not have to cover any kind of interest or debt, which is ridiculous. So what we work for is a whole lot of nothingness. We spend our life to facilitate a life, a lie. Yes.
On the ground.
Yes.
The bad one.
Yeah.
How far is the world economy on that bad?
You know, I usually use a picture of the pond. This, you know, the water lilies. You know that water lilies double each other every day. If you have a pond and it has doubled now, I don't know, for 2,000 days. And now, today, the pond is covered half. How long does it take to cover it full? One more day. That's exponential growth. And I believe we are in this last day. That's what I believe. Overdevelopment of interest. Let's quickly rush through it. Here, let me show you something of your native country here, South Africa. That's why I cannot celebrate everything which our finance minister produces. You know, I think I don't believe he knows this. But with what he knows, I believe he does a marvelous job. Yeah. Just to make that point clear. Say it again. Trevor Manuel. Now, I want to show you a few things here. Public debt in 2004 was $225.6 billion. That is 1.5 trillion rand. That was the public debt, government afflicted debt. Well, let's see. If you just anticipate an interest rate which is very low of 10%, the annual interest burden is about 150 billion rand, which is one quarter of the new financial year's whole budget, just for interest, of government debt. Now, the government needs to retrieve this through varied kinds of taxes, if possible, and surcharges and what have you. Somehow they need to get the money, and if they don't get enough, they just increase their little inflation a little bit more. They print some more. But it needs to come back, and this comes back somehow. Yeah. That's why they even don't lie if they produce this advertised string last year of your tax quenches the government's thirst. That's what you saw on the billboards. I don't know whether you read it. For weeks I could read it on huge billboards. It's not even a lie, it's the truth. They're honest. 2004's interest due for government inflicted public debt alone would have built roughly 300,000 Vininkaya buildings. You know this ad, do you? You know, send da 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 and you can win each month. Somebody wins the dream home of 500,000. Now, just with the interest they throw out every year out of the window for public debt, they could build every year 300,000 of them. And if you anticipate that 10 people can live in a nice house like this, in African terms, so you have housed 3 million people in a year, which makes it 6 in 2. Or in 10 years you have housed the whole nation. And here they dig around and give a few billion here to improve. And now they give money to housings now, but as loans or as subsidies or something like this. But they throw money out of the window just like nothing. And that's why I say I think they don't know what they are doing. How would this interest figure translate into building of much needed hospitals, schools, infrastructure, etc.? The interest burden for private and corporate debt, which surpasses the public debt by far, is not even considered here. And you must imagine that all the debt gets translated into prices for services. You know, we say, hail, now we get more service. But we pay for the service. The thing is, we cannot choose which service we want, which we should. That's why I wonder what the people do when the elections come now. And now the ANC says we want to give more service delivery. And you wonder why is it after 10 years that all of a sudden they want to do it. The others say we don't want corruption. I don't believe them either. Because they don't even know what corruption is. Tomorrow we speak about corruption. Anyway. Did you know that every day the third world pays the industrialized world 300 million every day in interest? Every day, the developing nations pay $300 million in interest. That is 109.5 billion per year. In comparison, all development aid is only half that amount, which means the money they receive in order to benefit doesn't even cover the interest for the money they received before. In other words, they have no chance. Say it again.
Yeah. Yes. And the industrialization aren't actually even giving. They still
gain. Oh, we come even to that one. deception. We perceive it as good and true because we cannot read it. We don't understand it. Today, it is common for individuals, corporations, nations to borrow anew just to be able to pay the interest on the old debt. Did you know that? You don't borrow because you want to do something. You borrow in order to pay the interest on the other money which you wanted to have in order to do something.
Which you didn't do.
And our captains of the economies keep on smiling. They think everything is fine. And if they would listen to what you listen today, they would crucify me. That's why you're in for a hard time. Because now you're enlightened. Your conscience will not keep you still anymore.
Luckily, we have only a little bit of knowledge. You've got everything. They're going to come.
No, I don't. I only know in part two. We have an overdevelopment in speculation. Speculation at stock market seems to be a great way of making lots of money fast. That's why individuals, companies and even churches try their luck. And I gave you here the example now of the church, the Anglican Church in England, which was reported to have lost £1.0 billion or $1.6 billion in 2002 on the stock market. You wonder, what is the Anglican Church doing at the stock market? Now, if you don't understand how the stock market works, you think they are business oriented. But stock markets are speculation businesses. Mm-hmm. Prove it
to you. Trying to give to the rich.
Fair distribution, no one. The stock market is a zero-sum game. That's it. There's no miraculous increase of money taking place. Whatever one side wins, somebody else has to work for. That's how it is. There's no money falling from heaven. As a result, constantly rising amounts of money get faster and more hectically invested because people lose quickly. It's only a few who really win and who know how to manipulate in order to win. But we talk about this. Yeah, we talk about this when we talk about God's principles a little more into depth. Exchange rate speculations provide new fields with undreamt profit possibilities. You know, there are some people around that just borrowed for 2 or 3 days a few hundred billion in order to make an exchange speculation, and then they paid it back. And they became billionaires overnight just by shifting money from one country to the other and shifting it back. And if they would have lost, all they would have to pay were the interest on this few hundred billions for 3 days or so. That's what they do now. But I show you more. Here's Margaret Kennedy. She says, the global volume of speculative monetary transactions between 1974 and 2000 increased to 97%. In other words, it's only 3% of transactions being real goods and services, including tourism. In other words, whatever is done in this world economically, 97% is pure speculation. In 2001, the daily volume of trading exceeded $2,000 billion, or $2 trillion. The daily volume, every day, $2 trillion. That's $730 trillion trading volume in a year. Whereas in the 70s, it amounted to just 10% of it, 1% of it. What makes the situation so dangerous is that all the currency and gold reserves of all the central banks in the world amount to only the volume of a transaction handled in 8 to 7 hours. In other words, of the 730 trillion, we only have a backup for 7 to 8 hours, which is about, I don't know, what is it? 240 billion or so. It's difficult to explain. We don't even have enough to back up what we are doing here. So we create a bubble. That's why I believe we are on the last day and it will burst soon. And by the way, what is by the way? And this is what I wanted to quickly tell you. 75% of all the money in circulation in the world are private currency US dollars. Did you know that the US Federal Bank is the only private currency holding institution? It's owned by a few high finance groups like Rothschild and Rockefeller, etc. And it's not United States currency, a government currency. It's private money. It used to be backed by the gold of the United States, and it used to be backed by economic activity, which was abrogated or canceled in 1971 by Nixon. And nowadays, it's a free-floating private currency, and they just swamped the whole economy with it. The United States owns most of the world's gold. After the World Wars I and II, they forced basically every party who had borrowed something or needed their assistance to pay them in gold. So I estimate that if the things are true, they have about 70% of the gold reserves. Now, the US dollar is a free-floating currency which has no backing. Basically, they can do it at will. That's why you can read something like they have pallets, stacks of new US dollar bills shipped to Iraq to use. You know, there's no economic activity for it. They just give it out in order to do something. People think it's value. And even here, South Africa is very proud. They have 19.7, now it's 22.2 billion, I think, in reserves, which is only 4% of what we produce in value in a year. But only 10% of this is in gold. The rest is in US dollars, worthless US dollars. So the United States even has forced other countries to sell them their gold and back their own currency with worthless private US dollars. And Greenspan, who now left the World Bank, he slipped up one day and said, listen, the US dollar will not last very long because it has no real value. Even if it goes down, they risk it. What they want to do is they want to create a new currency, which is called the euro dollar. It's supposed to come out at some stage next year. I don't know whether it's happening. But then they quickly devalue the US dollar, with which, by the way, they bought basically all the main resources in the world, food, water, etc. It's US dollar based. They devalue it and then revalue new the price of the gold. At the moment, it's also already increasing from 370 last year to 540, but they anticipate something like 6,000 US dollars per fine ounce, which makes them overnight the ones who have everything and all the others who have nothing. And this is what we are working towards, just by the way.
So how does devaluing the dollar help?
At the moment it doesn't help. It doesn't help. But they risk it even if it's devaluation, because they just throw more money on the market. It doesn't really care. Because they replace it anyway.
But you're saying coming after the dollar euro, they would devalue. Surely they would strengthen it.
No, they take it off the market, sorry, not devalue it. They take it off the market with a new currency. That's the goal. That's the goal of a few who pull the strings in world finances and who have the right, because we are all enslaved and hooked up to this. Let's move on. Time is flying. Economic consequences, inflation. Just a few statements and then we leave it with that. Inflation is one form of fraud, is what a central banker once said. So it's basically unrighteous. Income without performance is another thing. Interest is a tribute which the laborer, from industrial workers right up to farmers and entrepreneurs, has to pay to the moneylender in order to enable work at all. The interest will be calculated into the price of every product, that's what I said, and therefore shifted to the consumer. It's a heavy burden for the vast majority, and an effortless source of income for a small portion. Interest is income without labor and therefore ethically unjustifiable. There you go. Then we have income through interest inflated prices. Like I said, I don't really want to go into this. I leave you with the statements. You can read them yourself. Increasing income disparity between the employed and self-employed, simply because those who have a business can charge whatever major cost they have onto the consumers. Consumers have to pay. And another thing is we have an increasing unemployment, which we have another statement from the church here. I leave you with that because I want to move on to this quickly here. Ecological consequences, something we often disregard. Johannes Janitzky, a lecturer on tax law in Germany, says there's a horse rider dilemma. And he says, well, in our economies, the rider starts growing, gets heavier, then the horse must grow as well. But it doesn't. The rider is the money and the horse is the economy. So we have a problem here. Anyway, so this leads to problems. We have to grow, which means we cut the trees quicker down. We build more cars. You know, it's not good that you have the highly sophisticated BMWs of 2 years ago. You need them from today. You know, just said to my family, because we drive Polo, the small Polo for the five of us is bigger than the Golf, which we used to have 10 years ago. And still we consider it as a small car now. That's how we have changed. You know? Anyway, chemical industry, there are some examples which I usually tell a bit about. Nigeria, we disregard totally the environment. It's like a moloch, a mess in Nigeria, just in order to get to the oil. It doesn't matter as long as we grow. Tax laws which encourage, for instance in Germany we have a few very good laws which encourage the people to destroy environment more so that they can write off tax more, you know, it should be the other way around, but anyway we are so sophisticated. So we do all that, but here's a statement and I truly believe it, which says 99% of the people don't see the money problems. Science doesn't see it, that's why you don't get it taught even at universities. The economy doesn't see it, that's why nobody does change anything. And the latter one even declares it to be non-existent. But as long as we don't see the money problem, don't see the money economy as a problem, there is no prospect of ecological transformation of our societies. Actually, it's proven that if you even invest into ecological sustaining measures, you basically destroy even more than you keep. But anyway, that's only as a sideline. I told you I give you lots of information, and here comes the one which I really want to bring across. Your questions with the war. Because the growing gap between the haves and have-nots due to debt and interest is an explosive for social tension all over the world. This in turn leads to political tension and triggers violence right up to revolts and civil wars. Even the unrest we have in South Africa is part of it. It's not because the people don't know, it's because they feel there is some injustice and they don't know how to pinpoint it. The inflation of poorer countries does not only ruin their currency, but also their political economies. Poverty and hunger are the results leading to chaos and streams of refugees. The money condition, compulsion for growth and capital commitment drives industrial nations into overarmament, and this is what we find. They produce because they need new markets, and the consumers can only swallow so much. So the best thing in order to grow is making weapons. Now, it only lasts for a while because it's not really beneficial for the population, but at least for a while. So when you produce new weapons, what do with the old weapons? Right, you give them to Africa and let these guys fight the wars you should be fighting. So not only do they spend the money they have too little on the wrong things by buying weapons instead of helping the people, they even start destroying themselves, which creates new economic possibilities, because now you have to rebuild the country. You see? Great stuff. War is the most generous and effective cleansing crisis to get rid of overinvestment. There you go, Charles. This is what you said. It opens enormous possibilities of new additional capital investment and ensures that all accumulated stocks in goods and capital are thoroughly consumed and worn. Much faster and more drastically even than any common depression would, with the strongest artificial support, would accomplish. Thus, war is the best means to postpone the ultimate catastrophe of our capitalistic economic system. In other words, we're heading either for wars or for a breakdown. They predicted, guys who understood this, predicted the First and the Second World War. Nobody listened. What did we have? Yes. You see, it goes even so far that in Iraq, they decided on who is rebuilding what before it was even destroyed. Can you imagine?
The same way of taxing than the Roman Empire.
That's not new. I mean, the whole problem, money is a problem ever since man is around.
Yeah.
Wait for the statements. That's a true word. Yeah, there you go. The Third World War has already started.
Yeah.
silent, but therefore nevertheless calamitously war. It's a war against the Latin American continent and against the whole third world. A war for external debt. It's stronger. The strongest weapon is the interest rate, and it's deadlier than the atomic bomb. There you go. Another statement: every weapon that is produced, every warship that is deployed, it should read, every missile that is launched basically embodies a theft from those who hunger and aren't fed, or those who shiver and aren't clothed. There you go, a few people know. But just to sum it up, this is how it works. We have higher interest income on money capital. Are you with me? Because we have interest, it's an income for which nobody had worked yet. So in order to cover it, you need to work. This income through interest, leads to further overgrowth of monetary assets. You know the picture where it went round and round in a circle? It grows and grows and grows just because of the interest. Now, the higher interest, the higher monetary assets actually empower banks, because it's all channeled through the banks, which increases their turnover, which gives them more income, even if it is not a high percentage. But because we have made them agents, now they even start manipulating markets. With this comes an increase of heavy indebtedness, because at the same rate that wealth is produced, the assets grow, the debt needs to grow as well. It's always balancing, which leads to an increase of interest on debt, which needs to be recovered through the economy, which basically, first of all, if you don't do anything, leads to smaller profits or smaller wages, in order, you know, because now interest in our cost pricing becomes a cost position, just like salary, just like fuel, just like water. But it gets bigger and bigger. And if you don't grow, if you don't produce more, the stuff you give to the other parties needs to become smaller. Which leads to social tensions, increasing problems, right? Poverty, unemployment, bankruptcies, mass strikes, price increases, turmoil, violence, crime. The only way we know out is basically by growing more, so that the interest which comes without activity gets covered by activity. We need to produce more, which leads to more environmental burden and destruction, both of which end up in crises, wars, and disasters. If you don't like this picture, maybe you like that one more. Our today's monetary system causes, on the one side, increasing discrepancy between the poor and the rich. Those who get, because they have too much anyway, get even more. And those who have little, because they need to borrow and pay back more, get less and less. Now, this results that those who really have the money, they make sure that their rights are protected, and their privileges. Just look at society. Whoever has money has a say. Whether they have brains, it doesn't really matter. As long as they have money, everybody listens to them. On the other side, you have an increasing impoverishment of those who work. Or, if they don't have work, you overload the country, the government, because now they have to take care of the poor and needy. Now, all that results in increasing problems socially, violence and what have you, corruption and crime. People, because they don't get what they are supposed to get, they resort to corruption and say, listen, I have the right to take it, and if nobody gives it to me, I take it myself. That's why you get all the problems. Dangers of war. Now, on the other hand, with a monetary system, in order to combat all these problems, you need to grow. But this growth causes the interest burden to be covered by even more economic output. You need to produce more. You need to exploit more. You need to do more, even if you don't want to. That's why you create wants. That's why you create all sorts of ideas which are really irrelevant, but you still fall for it. increasing, which leads into increasing exploitation of the limited natural resources, which is a problem. But we come to that later, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, and an increasing destruction and strain on the base of our lives. See, we are supposed to leave an inheritance for our kids, well, but we are busy part of destroying it. Just don't know it. Now, all of that also has consequences, the consequence of international peace, because we trespass on other countries' resources. We don't have them anymore, so we need to just steal from others, which ultimately leads to wars. And there you go again. Whatever we do with the current system, either we get rid of the system, which is not so easy because, first of all, something else has changed, or we will be part of a collapse resulting in a war. So, maybe this makes sense more. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, cisterns that cannot hold water. You know, the two problems. We say, God, you who have created everything, and you who have figured out everything, we don't need you. The life giver, we don't need you. We can do without you. And so we create something to replace God, and we want to keep what God wanted to give to us under certain conditions for free. We want to keep ourselves on our conditions. It just doesn't work. It just sickens, goes through all these holes and cracks. So maybe it makes sense that God said this. I don't know. Let's finish off with this one here. What would be the solution? Don't answer me because it's 10 already. We better go home. But what would be the solution? And I just wanted, with all the bad news which I delivered today, I want to leave you with something to smile about. I'm not sure whether this is the solution. You know, we keep the tools and utilize them as usual and just change the way of food preparation. Now, if you understand the allegory, the picture, you know, keep the tools, just use everything as we had, just prepare our lives a little bit different, you know. If you don't do the French fries long ways, put them upright into the bank. Anyway, anything which needs to be resolved now, otherwise I want to release you. Could you follow? Does it make sense? I know I gave you a lot to swallow. I know I gave you a lot to think about. Maybe you knew some of this stuff. Maybe some is new. I don't know. But I hope it gave you a picture, the picture which is more to the truth, that actually there is no way out unless. And from tomorrow we talk a little bit about unless, a little bit more about unless. But if you just keep the way going, the way you get going, you probably go right up to those guys who saw on their branches already. That's what I wanted to leave you with, so that you have a good night's rest. Anything you want to quickly ask or add? Otherwise I pray and release you into
the wild.
Into the wild. Shall I just pray? Okay. You're tired, no? Well, Lord, I guess we must be tired, because it was not just a whole day, it was even a lot of swallowing now in the evening. And I just want to ask you that you give us the ability to store it up at a safe place in our spirits, everything we have heard, and that we can refer back to all the truth about the reality of what's happening at the moment in the world, even the stuff we have not been talking about. I also want to ask you that you eradicate and erase everything which has been nonsense coming out of my mouth. It's really not relevant. We just want to keep there what is necessary in order to understand what comes from tomorrow onwards. And I thank you for that. I thank you for the nice fellowship we had here, for the good spirit which is in this room, and the people still smiling, not shooting at me. I want to pray, Father, that they have a good way home, a safe journey, and that when we get together tomorrow again, we are rested and ready to take on another day. Thank you, Lord. Amen and amen. Be blessed and go, but go quickly. Thanks for listening. I hope so. We find out tomorrow.